Welcome back to Perfect Takes. I'm your host, Stephen Patton, joined as always by my co-host and dear friend, Jake LaQuire. And today we are going to be breaking down the playoff picture and season awards. We are seeing through the glass ball. We are all seeing, all knowing, going to kind of tell you what is going to play out in 2025. And so we'll break down the AFC and the NFC playoff pictures and then talk about the awards. Jacob, how was your Labor Day weekend?
It's pretty good. Got some good college football. The top 10 matchups, I think, disappointed if you're an offense fan, but there's actual real defense being played. So if you're more of an NFL fan, I'm sure you enjoyed the big matchup games. And I know you said that we're going to peek into the crystal ball and tell you the future. That's what I'm going to do. I don't know what Steven's going to do here with his predictions, but just throwing that one out there.
You see, Jacob's just projecting right now because his precious Alabama has fallen off its pedestal since Nick Saban has retired, unfortunately. So we'll jump right into it. Who is your number one seed in the AFC? If you have this all figured out at this point in time.
Yeah. So I don't like giving out the script, but because you're going to ask who the number one seed is, it's going to be the Baltimore Ravens. I think it can be between one of two or three teams, really. But Baltimore, I think, is just so talented across the board. I think they're very disciplined, very well coached. They have experience in winning the division like over the past half decade or so. The only thing that really holds them back is Lamar Jackson being injured. And he's been healthy for the last couple of years. Well, knock on wood that he has another healthy season. I think it's Baltimore's division to win, to be quite frank, and I think they can stack up some wins against some of the lower-ranked teams within that division, being as how complete of a team they are.
They are arguably the most complete team in the NFL. What they did on defense this past offseason is pretty incredible by adding guys like Jaire Alexander and Malachi Starks to an already pretty loaded group, and that's not even mentioning probably my favorite defender, that they added, and that being like Mike Green and just what he brings to the edge in that room. I also have the Ravens as the number one seed. I think there are a couple other teams that could be vying for it. And I think the two teams that are typically in contention with it, I know the team that I'm going to throw out as my two seed is not the team that you're going to throw out as your two seed or even the winner of the AFC West. But until the Kansas City Chiefs prove otherwise, they've shown with Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, they win the division and they typically finish as either the first or second seed. Now, obviously that hasn't always been the case, but for the most part, that is the historical precedence they've set. And there's nothing that's necessarily changed to lead me to believe that's going to change. I think they bolster the offensive line and fix that issue. And after the first 6 weeks, they get Rashee Rice back. And typically this is a team that starts strong in September. So getting back a really good offensive playmaker in the middle of October, I think will help them down the home stretch. They do have one of the tougher schedules to start the year, but again, that home stretch that I'm talking about when they're going to have Rashee Rice and probably hit that second gear is a lot easier. So this is a team that I think can rack up still a bunch of regular season wins, and I see them as the two seed. Who do you see as the two seed in the AFC?
So my two seed is probably your three seed. I have the Buffalo Bills as my two seed. They have the MVP. Josh Allen, you can't really discount how good of a player he is. It's kind of like how I feel about Lamar Jackson for for Baltimore. So I'm so confident in them being the one seed. That's one of the major reasons I'm so confident in Buffalo being the two seed. Their division is just very, very easy. I have no question in my mind that they will win the AFC East. I think they have one of the better offensive lines in football. I think they added a lot to that defense where they had some holes late in the season where they had to get in some shootouts. But I trust Josh Allen and that offense to deliver them a lot of regular season wins. We've talked about regular season wins. Buffalo has been one of the better teams against the other top AFC teams. I would say it's probably in order, Baltimore and Buffalo. So that's why I have them 1 and 2. You mentioned Kansas City. I have them as my first wild card team. A precedence has to be broken at some point. They can't win it 30 straight years or so, unless you're the Patriots, right? But even the Patriots had blemishes in their, let's say, 20-ish year reign of the winning the AFC East. And so
was Tom Brady on those teams or starting quarterback for those teams?
It doesn't matter. They had blemishes. Like, that's the point. They also went, 11 years without a Super Bowl win, I think. Maybe it's 10 years. Like, there are gaps. Yeah. Like, this dynasty isn't going to last forever. The last image that in our mind of the Chiefs is them getting blown out in the Super Bowl, right? This isn't the perfect, infallible superstar team that they were like that was there 5 years ago, even 3 years ago when Travis Kelce was still maybe the number one receiving option in the NFL. Like, there are holes there. So with that in mind, my three seed is who I think will win the division, the Denver Broncos. I think their roster is phenomenal. My one question mark is probably the most important question mark. The quarterback, Bo Nix, can he take that step from being more of a system manager to something beyond that? But the rest of the roster is pretty immaculate to me outside of the receiver room. And now that the team's fully Sean Paytonized, they have the weapons he likes to deploy. I think this is a team that can rack up a lot of regular season wins, especially leaning on a defense that I think is pretty close to as regression proof, as we've seen in recent memory, based on the star power they have on that side of the ball.
I'll hold out on regression proof. And obviously the downturn we saw with this unit was when they went from Ejiro Evero to Vance Joseph. But this is a defense that is like only a calendar year removed from allowing 70 points. And obviously you go new regime, new coaching staff. They have that in the building. They have a lot of stability on not only the defensive line, but the back end. But this is a team that I wouldn't necessarily
say. It would be almost two calendar years, yeah, since they allowed the 70 points.
Well, yeah, it'd be two. Yeah. I'm thinking like with the last season that we have of actual like evidence is 2024. So that's what I'm saying. Like you go a year before that. But yes, two calendar years, really one season prior to last year. And you have kind of that still like it isn't like fresh by any means. This is definitely in the rearview mirror. But this
I'd say it's much less fresh than Kansas City getting smoked in the Super Bowl.
Well, again, when you're looking at the Kansas City situation, the Chiefs outside of 2023, when they last won the Super Bowl against the 49ers, they haven't typically fielded a top 10 unit on defense when you look at some of the advanced metrics. They're typically about average. And the whole point of what Steve Spagnuolo does is he'll whip up a couple game plans that'll help eke them out the win. So them getting blown out by the Eagles, who are a very complete team, that isn't like concerning to me because that isn't their strong suit with the Kansas City Chiefs. When we go back to the Broncos, we talk about the upgrades that they added. They're very injury prone players because of the way they want to play their position. So Dre Greenlaw, Talahu Hufanga, like those guys are very vicious and they're going to add a different dimension to this defense. But again, you're going to have to count on them for all 17 games. You're going to have to, in essence, count on like where you're saying Bo Nix taking a step as a player and not like just staying at the same level because he's got to take a step for this team to take the division. This is a team that got swept by the Chargers and didn't get swept by the Chiefs because luckily the Chiefs at that point had already locked up the number one seed. But this is a team that didn't really dominate its division last year. So they're going to have to take a step. And why I think it's definitely feasible, it's there. To me, I see them as the first wild card, the number five seed. And we'll get to that in a little bit. But the three seed I have are exactly like you said, the Buffalo Bills. Josh Allen, the reigning MVP, what they're able to do in jumbo packages. Josh Allen had the most dropbacks with six offensive linemen on the field. Over 5% of his dropbacks were in these jumbo packages. Nobody else was even like above 5%. The closest person was Bo Nix, and I think he was a little above 4%. But that is just, I think, the physical presence that the Bills bring week in and week out. And you know what's coming. They're able to run the ball very effectively and impose their will. It's just you're not able to stop them because they're able to move a lot of these lighter defenses. And so that's an advantage that the Ravens take advantage of. It's something that the Chiefs with Andy Reid do with some of their 12 personnel looks.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
So it's definitely the new meta is how can you get big as an offense and it not impact what you're able to do from a play calling standpoint? And if anything, adds something to the element of being able to disguise the run and the pass. So at number four, I have the Houston Texans winning the AFC South after that long-winded response. Who do you have winning the AFC South and why?
Yeah, it's the Texans. Just the rest of those teams don't really inspire confidence. You got to look at last year, and I think a lot of the questions we have about this year's Texans are the same thing, or the same questions we had last year about those Texans. They still won 10 games, right? This was still a good team leaning on the backs of one of the better defenses in the league. That defense, you could say, got better. They have stars at almost every level, excuse me, on that defense, and they attempted to fix the O-line issues, right? They bring in a new offensive line coach, new offensive coordinor, like five or six new offensive linemen in general. And while I don't like a lot of the talent they brought in, I think if they can do something different schematically, that might help. That's like my main question, is that offensive line, not only in pass pro, but in the run game as well, because even though they weren't great if like efficiency wise at running the ball last year, that's like where a lot of the chunk yards came from for them, was just spamming Joe Mixon runs. And Joe Mixon's not going to play to start the year. I think he's still on the PUP list. I don't think he's come off of it as of today. So it's going to be O-line and how can CJ Stroud bounce back from a down year compared to his rookie year? Those are my main questions, but in that division, it's really hard for me to see a team challenging them. Like, we got to think the Colts were next and they were 8-9, I believe. They have their own QB turmoil. The Jaguars were just a horrible team last year, and I don't think that they're going to be fixed this year. And then the Titans had the number one overall pick. So for me, it was a pretty clear Houston Texans division win. That being said, I think they're going to be the last of the division winners, so the four seed. I think like the Ravens, Bills, even Kansas City, who has the first wild card, I think they'll get more wins than the Houston Texans.
When you look at the Houston Texans offense, this is an offense that finished 21st in EPA per play last year. They were an average offense CJ Stroud's rookie year. You're wanting to see them take a step towards being above average, maybe a top 12 unit potentially by the year's end. And that's going to take a lot of cohesion on the offensive line, finding the right balance of players that work well together, because there's not a lot of stars there. It really is just finding a group that can play well and comfortably in front of CJ Stroud to give him time to find some of their dynamic playmakers on the outside. I mean, they added Jaden Higgins, Jalen Noel, Christian Kirk, playmakers to help CJ Stroud out and alleviate some of the pressure off Nico Collins' shoulders. So I like what they did on that front. The defense is gaudy and disgusting. I mean, Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson are arguably, I think they are better than Rashawn Gary and Micah Parsons. If you're talking about like edge duos, like they really are that ferocious. And that's something that I would not want to face as a quarterback. I think it's awful that Matthew Stafford, who's gotten epidural this offseason and has very, very limited, that's the first pass rushing duo he's facing all year. So it's one of those situations where that is what's going to carry the Houston Texans. And it's hard for me not to see them winning 10 games again, because they're going to beat up on easier teams. They're going to lose against the contenders. And that's going to probably be a similar trend unless they're able to kick into another gear as the season goes on. And that's really, I think, what we're going to be looking at with just how this offense evolves. And if the defense can continue to being as great and dominant as it has been.
Well, even last year with their issues, I know that they beat Buffalo in the regular season. I don't think they beat Baltimore, but like even with the issues, they're able to contend with some of the better teams. So I think they really need to figure out that offensive line and have Stroud bounce back from what he was last season. We can get to the first wild card because we each talked about each other's first wild card. For me, it was the Chiefs. I like what they've done with that offensive line, but they're like, looking at the history of this Chiefs, we can call it a dynasty now. They've been to five Super Bowls, right? They've won three of them. Throughout the history of this dynasty here, I've never felt less, how do I say it? I've had way more questions now than I have any other year. Even when they lost Tyreek Hill, they still had Chris Jones, who was the best player or best defensive player in the league to me. They had Travis Kelce, who was already the best tight end, one of the best pass receiving options. They had Patrick Mahomes, who was the best quarterback in the league at that point. They had multiple star interior offensive line. Like, they had everything figured out still after losing Tyreek Hill. Now, is Mahomes the best QB in the league right now, like, over the last 2 years? I would say Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen have played better than he has over the last 2 years. Travis Kelce is just not a good player anymore. Like, he might not even be the best tight end on that roster. Chris Jones is still pretty good. He got a first-team All-Pro last year. I think a few other players deserved it, but he's still a very good player. After that, your star power is getting more bare, and I like some of the moves they've done, but it's not like they were dominating in the regular season. They were getting very lucky, eking out wins against teams that they should have been destroying in the regular season. So I think it's going to catch up to them. I still think they'll make a playoff run because they have that experience there. But at some point, it's got to break. And I think there are more teams. It's not just Denver. I think all the teams in that division have improved enough to where they can take games off of the Chiefs and make it a competitive division down the stretch.
I think the issues that we have with the AFC West and this Chiefs dynasty is I'm not predicting the Chiefs are going to be in the Super Bowl again, but this is a team with the Reed and Mahomes era that hasn't missed the AFC Championship game, even after getting blown out back in, I believe it was 2020, against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And obviously they lose in the AFC Championship game in overtime against the Bengals in Arrowhead the following year. But it was one of those circumstances where, like, you had that bad taste in your mouth, you have questions about the roster, and they're able to come out swinging and be right back in the thick of it. And to me, it's hard with just how much talent is still on the roster. And even if we're going to say Mahomes is the third best quarterback just based on the last 2 years, I'm going to take that in the AFC West. Like, I think they still win that division, because as much as, like, Brady and Belichick, yes, they had a 10-year drought of not winning a Super Bowl. They still went to 2 Super Bowls during that span, and they still went to several conference finals. And so that's where I think the Chiefs are still very much in the thick of it. And I know you're saying that, yes, they are going to potentially go on a playoff run. They're right in the thick of it being a 5 seed. I just don't see them losing a grasp on the division unless Mahomes gets hurt, just because that's Mahomes and Reed's dynamic. That's what we saw with Belichick and Brady for so long.
Right, but we're not talking about how far they're going to go in the postseason. This is, I don't think that their roster is good enough to win 14 games like they consistently have, because we're talking about division standings.
But that's where I just talked about, like, a little bit ago. Like, you're expecting the Broncos to elevate to a place they weren't last year. They got swept by the Chargers, and they would have been swept by the Chiefs had the Chiefs played their starters. So this is a team that still has a gear to find. And so you're thinking the Broncos have found that with some of the additions, and that could possibly be the case. I'm going on past precedents of going, I'm not going to bet against Reed and Mahomes to win the division. And so that's where I think the we disagree. And that's where we're having Congress here.
I agree. And that they did win 10 games with a rookie quarterback as well. Not an easy thing to do, unless you're Jaden Daniels or Stroud, right? But those are once in every couple years kind of guys. But I think we each have Denver and Kansas City at 3 and 5, or you have Kansas City at 2. But the second AFC West team is our 5th seed, respectively. For me, I have an AFC North team as my 6th seed.
It's not who you think it is.
Gosh. I have the Pittsburgh Steelers as my 6th seed.
No way. No, you had my heart in my throat there for a second, because I thought you were about to say Joe Burrow and the Bengals. I was like, how dare you? And I have written here on my little cheat sheet, because, like, me and Jacob didn't want to, like, have, like, either of our decisions swayed, but, like, I have Pittsburgh right here at the 6 right here.
So there you go. So, and I think in a lot of the divisions or playoff standings, it is a regular season movement. That's why I'm so, like, dug in on the Denver thing. And what do the Pittsburgh Steelers do every regular season? They win games regardless.
They win the ones they're supposed to.
Yeah. And regardless of the quarterback, regardless of any, they also play the Ravens really tight in the late season matchup, like week 16 or whatever. But outside, like, what I'm trying to say is they're going to win their 10, 11 games. It doesn't matter if it's Aaron Rodgers or a washed Russell Wilson or Justin Fields. They're going to get it done. And I think that's just going to be enough wins to get them the 6th seed in the AFC.
Yeah. And this was a team when we broke.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Look down the NFC North that I think if things break right for them, because they're going to have an easier schedule than some of the other teams in the AFC conference by finishing a little bit lower. I think they finished second in the division last year. So in those instances, you're not playing division winners across the AFC or even your NFC opponent. And so in those circumstances, I think they could get a leg up. And if they win a couple of games they're not supposed to, find a way to win 12, 13 games and maybe pull off the division. So I'm not saying it's going to happen. We both have the Ravens winning the division. But having the Steelers at the sixth seed and being the second best team in the AFC, I think we both see exactly that whole point you're making here, is that in the regular season, they know what they have to do to get there. It's just when they get to the postseason, they don't have another gear to beat a playoff team. They just beat up on teams that they're supposed to beat.
Well, and it's the quarterback question. It's haunted them since before Big Ben retired. They still haven't found it. Rodgers is 42, 43 this year, so I'm not sure they'll find the life there with Rodgers to win a playoff game, but I certainly believe that they will win enough to get into the playoffs. Who is your seventh seed in the AFC, the final wild card spot?
When we broke down the AFC West, and this had me torn, I said only two teams would make it from that division. So that means I can't have the Chargers here. And you already heard my plight about the Bengals. I think they're a 9-8 team. I think they might be the team that just sneaks in based on a few tiebreakers. They were right on the cusp last year, so I could definitely see it being a possibility. But I think the Jacksonville Jaguars, I think Liam Cohen is going to be able to lean into some of the short passing game that made him so, I think, prolific in Tampa Bay. And that's going to unlock a part of Trevor Lawrence that we haven't seen before. And hopefully it makes him more comfortable. And I think if the offense can get going and find that gear that the Bucs found last year and be a top 10 offense, not a top 5 offense, a top 10 offense, this is a team that I think can win enough games to find themselves in the seventh seed. Because again, they play in the AFC South. So they're going to be able to beat up on some pretty bad teams. Like the Tennessee Titans, as much as they are going to be an exciting squad to watch, they just had the first overall pick. And you look at just like that and the mess that's in Indianapolis right now, like there are games on your schedule that you can go out and just flat out win, where it's like the Broncos, we just talked about it. They have to play the Chiefs and the Chargers four times out of the year. And the Raiders are a feisty bunch themselves. So that doesn't make it easy in terms of finding wins on your schedule. So that's why I lean the Jacksonville Jaguars here.
This is probably going to be the one we disagree with the most. I think the Jags aren't a very good team whatsoever. I think the personnel differences between what Liam Cohen had in Tampa Bay are just so much different than what he's going to have in Jacksonville. Like Tampa Bay's O-line is just so much better. You can argue Brian Thomas and what Travis Hunter will be equals what Evans and Godwin were able to output. I think Baker Mayfield is a much more consistent QB than Trevor Lawrence. And then the big one, the run game. I think figuring out the run game with the Tampa Bay O-line, much easier than the task he has this season. We'll see week one, because you and I will be watching that game with our eyes peeled because we're Panthers fans. But I'm not very high on the Jacksonville Jaguars at all. So they are not going to be my seventh seed. I'm gonna tell you who my eighth seed was before I reveal number seven. My eighth seed was the LA Chargers, for what it's worth. They just missed out. And while
quarterbacks here at 7-8, your hypothetical quarterbacks.
I am going to rip your heart out on this one, because this year, Joe Burrow and the Cincinnati Bengals will do enough to get into that seventh spot. They were right on the cusp last year, just missed out. And if they can, here's another if with a hypothetical QB. Let's say that they aren't 1-3 to start the year like they always are. Let's say they can actually get to 2-2 or something like that. then I think they'll do enough to get in. The defense, I don't know. I don't think it's going to be much, much better, but it might be like 30th instead of 31st. And we mentioned that, or I mentioned that Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen have been playing better than Mahomes. Joe Burrow has been playing better than Mahomes the last 2 years as well. And so if you can get another season of that out of him, I'm talking about the regular season. I'm not talking about the playoffs here. But he did beat him in the playoffs. But if we can get another season of that from him, if Ja'Marr Chase can be the like all pro, I'm not saying he's going to have another triple crown, but if he can continue being as good as he is, T. Higgins can elevate just a little bit. I think Chase Brown's an upgrade over the run game they had to start last year. I think they can get enough wins there to get to 10-7 and sneak into the seventh seed. I'm not saying they're going to be 13-4 or something like I think the Ravens or the Bills will be. But I think they'll do just enough to sneak into number seven there because it for me, it was pretty difficult. I think the Chargers will regress a little bit but just by virtue of them not improving enough in the offseason. I couldn't really get there with the Raiders. I think there's still holes in that roster. And then it was like, I don't like Indy and Jacksonville or Cincinnati. And for me, I went with Cincinnati.
I could understand. Like
their offense was almost good enough to get there last year, you know?
But the thing is we're talking about a offense that is, and we'll get into this at some point when we really dive in with the Dallas Cowboys and break down that whole situation. I don't know exactly when we're going to do that, but you weren't able to win 10 plus games the past 2 years with, in essence, this core. And obviously, yes, Joe Burrow, T. Higgins, I think Chase has even missed a couple games over the past 2 years, but this nucleus, getting them all out on the field at the same time. It's like the LA Rams with Matthew Stafford, Puka Nacua. It was Cooper Kupp at the time. It's Davante Adams this year. And it's always this hypothetical situation where if we have everybody on the field, it's going to work out perfectly. We're going to do exactly what we need to do. And they came out and they laid a dud week one last year that really just shaped the season. Because if they beat New England week one and they finish 10-7, they get in over the Broncos. They play Buffalo week one, I believe. Like that's how the math mm-hmm. works out. And so they have the ability to then hypothetically go on that run. So I get that. But it's like we're going to keep seeing these games where they're going to go up against teams that are just going to be able to impose their will. And Joe Burrow has to go literally tit for tat. Like he's got to go drive for drive, touchdown for touchdown, field goal for field goal, like those kind of scenarios. And it's like, yes, we saw it last year, but it's been very rare that we see like a team keep repeating that kind of offensive efficiency outside of your Lamar Jacksons, your Josh Allens. And we've mentioned his name and he's fallen off a little bit recently is Patrick Mahomes. We have yet to see Burrow consistently deliver that kind of performance. So if he balls out again, I think he does deserve this start being mentioned with those guys. I think there's a big tier gap and we've had that discussion, but I think that's kind of what separates me with like putting Burrow here. And it's the same reason why I think Herbert's on the outside looking in as well. It's like, these are two talented quarterbacks, but we haven't seen them put it together enough consistently. And that's why I'm not bought in. I'm bought into Liam Cohen, maybe bringing a couple things we haven't seen. And that being the edge for a team with a weaker schedule. So that's why I lean Jaguars. I can understand having, though, the Bengals above the Jaguars. It's just hard for me seeing the Bengals sneak in. So with that, we move to the NFC. We spent almost 30 minutes breaking down the AFC. Did you have any other closing thoughts before we talk about the number one seed, San Francisco 49ers?
Not really. We had, six of the same teams, and then just the seventh seed was our disagreement. I just have more faith in that Bengals offense than any other unit of the possible teams. And that's a fair.
I would say the Chargers are probably the most complete team out of the ones we didn't talk about, but it's yes. Like they don't have like star power. And it's like, if you don't have like a Ja'Marr Chase or a Trey Hendrickson to help put you over the top in some of those key situations, it's like, what are we doing here? You know,
Burrow has also played a little bit better in playoffs than Herbert has. I like that a little bit better. And
Herbert's beaten Burrow.
That's true. And I talked about like regression proof defense with the Broncos. It's because they have stars. The fact that the Chargers are doing it with a lot of rookies, lesser name guys, I think that's way more prone to regression than a team like the Broncos, who were number one and then just added people. Like, it doesn't matter if Dre Greenlaw and Hufanga missed games. They were number one without him last year. Like, that's kind of where I'm hanging my hat with the – or not picking the Chargers in that regard.
This was a defense, though, and when we talk about the Broncos, they struggled against the Bengals deep down the stretch, and they got their ass kicked by the Buffalo Bills in the wild card game. So it's like, I definitely like the Broncos' defense. It's just when they start playing these elite teams, that's where I think the Greenlaw and the Hufanga, it's like you need those guys healthy to really, I think, compete and give yourself like an edge or a chance.
And your first overall pick, Jadai Barron as well, I think can fall into that category.
Absolutely. And then that's where it's like you go back to weak link systems. And I think that was a great addition there. But on the end.
Want to make a difference in your community, but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously, your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend or family member or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
NFC side, we talked about this when we broke down the NFC West. The San Francisco 49ers have a really easy schedule, and it's easy to write in 12 or 13 wins almost, just because this was still an offense that was around top 10 in efficiency last year, despite all the injuries they sustained. And on defense, they've gotten better by adding, I think, personnel and coaches that are going to improve this unit. Is this the team you see as the number one seed, or do you see a team that potentially grabbed an elite defensive playmaker snatching this spot?
So, caveat, I did all my predictions 2 or 3 weeks ago. So this was before the Parsons trade. And I'm sticking by a lot of these predictions. I think they're pretty fair. I have San Francisco as the number two seed. The Packers were actually my number one seed throughout this process. I was going back and forth on the top three teams in that division in particular as to who I think would win it. And the team I had the least questions about were the Packers in terms of consistency, in terms of holes that were created on the other two teams. I'm talking about the Vikings and the Lions, those other two rosters. And I just landed on the Packers and them gaining Micah Parsons, who's a top, what, 3-5 defender in the NFL. A week before the season opener, that just kind of helps my case, I would say. It doesn't make them the best team in the league by any means, but I think already having them as the one seed in my mind, and then adding Parsons, who can be like your bucket getter edge rusher, which is something they've been missing, that really takes them or solidifies them as the number one seed in my mind. The biggest question for them the past couple of years is, how do you handle the division games? This is another Mr. Hypothetical thing, but they were 1-5 in the division last year. If they're 3-3, they're the number one seed. Like, they're the 14-win Vikings or the 15-win Lions. It didn't shake out that way. So they have to be better in division. And I think getting a guy like Micah Parsons can help with some of those games.
Yeah, I don't think Caleb Williams or J.J. McCarthy are too thrilled about seeing the Packers on their schedule twice in the year.
Goff in week one.
Yeah, and it's those scenarios where, like, I think Goff, in Goff's case, like, a lot of the Detroit Lions' offensive line issues are interior. And so, unless Parsons, and I definitely believe Jeff Hafley is going to move him all over the field and really maximize what Parsons can do for a defense. But if he's strictly coming off the edge, I think Penei Sewell stands a chance. I'm not saying he's going to win all day. There's definitely going to be reps Parsons wins. But when you look at the tackle duo that the Lions trot out, I'm very comfortable about that as a Lions fan. But I'm saying Caleb Williams with his poor pocket management, in essence, rookie quarterback in J.J. McCarthy, like, you see those two guys coming off the edge. Like, we haven't seen how these guys perform under pressure, and they may not like it. So where you talked about, like,
we have seen how Caleb Williams plays under pressure.
Yes. We haven't seen him play under pressure with Ben Johnson aside from the preseason. And that has looked just as messy as last year, but I want to give the benefit of the doubt just because we haven't seen what it looks like now with year two. That being said, those are guys you don't want to see coming at you. And I think that star power is really what helps put the defense over the top. On offense, you need somebody else to step up. You need Josh Jacobs to be that 2,000-yard scrimmage ball carrier. You need Matthew Golden or one of these other wide receivers you drafted over the past half decade to step up and be that true number one. And if you get that, then I think this is a team that walks into the number one seed, that puts themselves in a position to go win a Super Bowl, because that's the window they've opened for themselves. But that's a lot of ifs on the offensive side. And so for me, I have the Packers as my number two. But I've seen a lot more with Kyle Shanahan and Brock Purdy, like proof of concept there, where I haven't seen it with Matt LaFleur and Jordan Love. We've seen it Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers. We just haven't seen it with Jordan Love yet. And so that's where that has to materialize for me to really buy in.
For sure. And like those reasons are why I have San Francisco as my two. We're flip-flopping here. Yeah. San Francisco, they do have a lot of I don't want to say major injuries, some minor injuries. Right, they have a couple, Brandon Ayuk still coming back. But even with those injuries, I think this team just faces such a favorable schedule. And it's not the teams, right, because you can never project the teams. I look at the quarterbacks that they're going to face. So they have Baker Mayfield, I think, is probably the best guy they're going to face. C.J. Stroud, and then Matthew Stafford, if he's fully healthy. Then after that, it's like the tier of Kyler Murray, Trevor Lawrence, whoever the Colts guy is, Bryce Young. These are not quarterbacks that you think of as like top five guys, right? So I think they're very favorable there. Robert Saleh should help this defense a ton against the run. Their new front is going to be much better against the run, I anticipate. Even with some rookie growing pains, I think they'll be a lot better. I just think they're going to win a lot of games just based on who's in front of them. And that's I'm not saying they're the most talented of the NFC teams. I think that's the team I just talked about, and my three seed are probably a bit more talented, but I think San Francisco's in a very favorable situation.
They are. And you have your star player on defense. Like where we talked about with the Packers, they're adding Micah Parsons. I'm going to be honest in saying this. I think Nick Bosa is a more complete player. Is he a better pass rusher? Probably not. Is he a better run defender? Absolutely. And so I think what he gives you on all three downs, I think the complete player and how they've filled out the rest of that defensive line, Robert Saleh being back in the building, Fred Warner still being the leader of that defense calling the plays, you have a lot of continuity to where I think Nick Bosa, and I don't have him as my defensive player of the year, but he is somebody I would take those odds for, because again, I have him as the number one seed. You have him as the number two seed. A lot of the people that gain awards, their teams in the playoffs because they're leading a really impressive unit. So you just listed off, they're not playing a ton of impressive quarterbacks. This guy has complementary pieces around him. I think Nick Bosa should be considered like top two, top three for defensive player of the year award. Number three, I have, and this is the surprise, but I said the Eagles wouldn't win the division. The NFC East, you haven't had repeat winners since the early 2000s, since I think Andy Reid was the Philadelphia Eagles head coach. I think that holds true again. And obviously the Cowboys, they jettisoned Micah Parsons. I don't want to count on them. Don't have the Cowboys making the playoffs. So it means the Commanders, I have winning the division. And I think Jaden Daniels is able to do it in year two. I think the Eagles, with a couple of the injuries they have to start the year, and then obviously losing some pieces, they're going to have to find their way, and they'll find their groove, and they'll win 11 games. I just think the Commanders can still win 11 or 12 and get the tiebreakers. So that's what I see here at the three.
So you know who the last team to have won it back-to-back year? It was actually 4 years in a row. You mentioned it. It was the Andy Reid Eagles. I think that's going to happen again. Yeah, 01 to 04, they won it four in a row. The talent level is just like such a big gap between Philly and Washington, or even if you want to include the other two in the division, which I don't really want to include at this point. I think the Cowboys might be like the NFC Bengals as far as we need to have Dak be in the MVP conversation if we're going to be competitive, but just don't see that happening this particular season. Philly's still a really, really good team, and even losing people like Milton Williams, like Josh Sweat, I trust the guys that are next up. Jahad Campbell looks like he's going to play. He's been practicing quite a lot. I know they lost N'Kobe Dean, who was one of their starters, but they also drafted Jahad Campbell in the first round. I don't have too many questions here outside of how far can Jalen Hurts elevate his game, really, to be like, I know we talked about him as like a top 10, or that was like a take, like the public perception of him as a top 10 guy. If he can hang around 12 to 15, the rest of this team is good enough, in my opinion. I think it's going to be very hard for them not to win the division. And just spoiler alert, Washington's not even going to be on my list. I think that they are a team that, while they took steps to improve, I think they lack a lot of juice outside of Jaden Daniels. And I think a lot of the guys they added outside of the draft are kind of older, injury-prone guys that I'm not super sure can elevate this team to win the division. Even last year, I don't want to say they didn't get close, because they did beat the Eagles one time and the other game was a closer game, but I don't know. Just seeing the NFC Championship and then seeing how the Commanders went about the offseason, I like that they added seasoned players. I don't like that they didn't get more explosive players, I guess, on offense.
So I can understand the concern on offense, Terry holding out till pretty much like the start of the season. And we've seen with some players, it's like they use it. And I don't know how much of it's like a leverage tactic of like, I don't want to be at training camp. I'm just going to kind of drag this out. And then when it gets rectified, training camp's over and I'm just good to go. Like, and some of these veterans can get away with it. Some have gotten hurt from holding out in those instances. So that's never a healthy scenario, but they were explosive from that standpoint. You traded for a Deebo Samuel, who, when you look at his yak, if he's on the field and he's getting the ball, like, he is one of the best explosive playmakers with the ball in his hands still. Like, that was reflected last year with some of the advanced metrics, and it's been true to who Deebo Samuel is. So you add that element in, that the running aspect is going to be heightened because you add Laremy Tunsil, you kick in your left tackle who played admirably well in the left guard, and then Josh Connerly has looked good in preseason. So all of a sudden your offensive line looks a lot better than it did last year, and you won 12 games last year. You had one possession games against the Eagles, the Ravens, the Steelers in losses, and these were playoff teams. The only game during the regular season where they got blown out was like week one against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So Jaden Daniels was really able to keep the team in it like throughout the entire year. And I think that was just a testament to not only who he is as a player, but the coaching staff and how they built this team. So while it is one of the oldest rosters, I think that's a good thing because everybody's kind of able to do their job. And they are replacing some of these guys with youth. You're seeing it in the secondary and this offensive line that they're adding veterans as much as they're adding rookies. And they're trying to get it to where it's like, hey, as these veterans are aging out and they aren't giving us as much, these younger guys have now kind of sat in the shadows and they're able to kind of step up and be starters. So that's the long-term vision I'm seeing with Adam Peters. And when we talk about me betting on the Commanders of the Eagles, I prefer Jaden Daniels over Jalen Hurts. If Saquon Barkley and A.J. Brown go down in terms of like injuries, and A.J. Brown missed time last year, he usually misses a few games each year. Saquon Barkley has not had a clean bill of health his entire career and is coming off a huge touch count. Like, those guys are out of the lineup. It changes what the Philadelphia Eagles offense looks like dramatically. Like, they are a star-studded team. And once those guys come off the field, it is not the same group. And so that is where I'm concerned about. Jaden Daniels proved with a bunch of nobodies outside of Terry McLaurin last year that he could make it work. We have yet to see Jalen Hurts do that. And that is what I'm banking on. So it is definitely a long shot. I understand it is not in my favor, this to work out. But that is the vision I see, and I'm banking on Jaden Daniels because I really do think this guy is he's like the Lamar Jackson, the Patrick Mahomes, where he's that guy that comes around now every half decade, and he really is just that much of a difference maker.
He certainly was impressive in his rookie season. I think as far as I don't want to say you're betting on Eagles injuries because that sounds kind of bad, but they, like you said, A.J. Brown was hurt last year. They absorbed it and won.
They were 3-3
games and still won Super Bowl. Even
when he came back,
that time.
That's when they. But that's what I'm saying. They were a 500 team with A.J. Brown out of the lineup, and actually they were 2-3 because they won Week One against Green Bay, and that's just with A.J. Brown out of the lineup. And so Mekhi Becton, he leaves. He was a big part of the run game on that right hand side, so you weren't going to get as much push on that with the next guy. And their offensive line is going to be fine. I'm not trying to use this as a knock. I'm just saying if Saquon and AJ Brown, which those two guys have not had a clean bill of health, they're off the field, it's a huge difference. And I think that's easy to see. I mean, those are star players, arguably top three at their position.
I think on the flip side, you could say if Terry McLaurin, if Laremy Tunsil, then the Washington Commanders are third in the division or something like that.
But we've seen this Commanders offense without Laremy Tunsil, and they were top five last year. Terry, I think.
Yes, but this is also a 1-year sample size with Washington, whereas the Eagles the past three or four years have won no less than 11 games. Yeah. I find it. I just think they're so star-studded, so deep as well, that they need like five major injuries for me to even consider knocking them down.
I think it's just AJ Brown or Saquon. I just think it's one of those two guys, and it changes the numbers.
We'll have to see. Number four, I can assume, is Tampa Bay. For both,
I think
of
we
us.
Both
they're,
do. We
yeah, we they're, we the they're a tier above everybody else. We spoke at length last week of the concerns we have with the Atlanta Falcons. I think we both agree the New Orleans Saints are just a bad team. And while I would love Carolina to be next up, kind of, I think we're still another offseason away from another good draft and another free agency to be in that Tampa Bay tier. So I don't think there's too much to say about Tampa. The wild cards, though, how do we have them stacking up? I can start with mine because I have two NFC Norths at 5 and 6. I think this division is just incredibly talented. I have Detroit at 5 and Minnesota at 6. I flip-flop those as well, like every day. I do have concerns about JJ McCarthy because this is essentially his rookie season, but because they invested so much in the interior offensive line, because they invested in the defensive line and they retained both coaches, I really trust what they can do. And then Detroit, they lose two coordinators, but they retain talent. And if they don't have some of the worst injury luck ever on defense, that can kind of cancel out some of the brain drain. So however you want to stack them up, 5 and 6, that's how I have Minnesota and Detroit.
I have those two teams in, but they're after the 5 spot. Those are my 6 and 7. Agree with you about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Baker Mayfield's proven that he can be a starter in Tampa Bay. It's the worst injury that I think concerns me. Because I don't think you want to put yourself in a position where you're even close to neck and neck with a team like the Panthers, and heaven forbid the Atlanta Falcons are kind of vying down the stretch. But those kind of scenarios, that's not what you want being reflectant. So I think them starting hot without Wirfs is going to make a huge difference. I think Emeka Ebuka is going to be the perfect Chris Godwin replacement to pair with Mike Evans. So I don't think you lose a lot. Wild card, because I had the Commanders winning the 3 seed, and because I said the Eagles will probably still win about like 11 games, this is where I have the Eagles. So they're at the 5 seed. Detroit, even though they have the coaching turnover, the roster is one of the most talented. You look at guaranteed money in terms of like how much you have locked up in the future. The Lions are like, I think, second to none right now. Like, they're above the Eagles in terms of money just like guaranteed for their players, which is pretty impressive. Like, the teams behind them are like the Bills, the Chiefs, the Bears, and then the Eagles. And so those are teams that are really dedicated to their current roster build. And the Lions have one of the best rosters. And I think with all of those guys back healthy, they're the second best team in the NFC North. And I think really have the ability to vie with Green Bay for the title. The Vikings, the reason why I have them here is because I'm not sold on Matthew Stafford's health. I'm not sold on the Sam Darnold experiment working in Seattle right out of the gates. And I'm not sold on the Arizona Cardinals. I'm really not sold on the rest of the NFC West, because that's where I see somebody else coming. Like, the NFC South, maybe the Carolina Panthers are that team that sneaks into the 7th seed. But for me, the Vikings, with just how complete a team they are on both offense and defense, coming off 13 wins, it's like they got to find a way to win like 9 or 10 games, right? Like, that's what I keep coming back to, is like they just find a way to do that, right? Like, and so that's who I have as the 7th seed, is the Minnesota Vikings. So I'm assuming you have the Cardinals because you're a Kyler Murray fan and you said the Commanders were left off, but maybe you'll surprise me with a team like the Seahawks or the Panthers.
I'm actually not a Kyler Murray fan anymore after last season. Jumping
off the Kyler Murray train, are we?
I believe I've said that on this podcast before, but you were listing off teams like with concerns, right? Like Seattle, I'm not buying them. The Rams, I just can't buy them. I don't think the Bears are going to be or take that step. Heaven forbid we get 4 teams from the same division in the, I mean, it's possible now with the wild card, but I just don't think that we're there yet. Panthers, I wish. But then you brought up the Cardinals. I'm sold on them. They were an 8-9 team last year.
It's not
because of Kyler. It's not because of Kyler. They were one of the most efficient running teams last year. They just have been since getting James Conner. I think Trey Benson.
They've lost their offensive line coach. Like, how do you feel about that?
But most of their O-line was playing the entire year, except for Jonah Williams. He didn't play, but he will be playing right tackle this year. I don't have a ton of concerns because Nick Rollis is still there. He's offense, right? And Petzing's the defense. Those two mixed up.
Drew Petzing is offense.
Petzing's still there. I don't have too many concerns there. Any team that has James Conner and Kyler is going to be an efficient running team. I think year two for Marvin Harrison Jr., who added like 40 pounds of bulk in the offseason, he should be able to deal with some of those like more contested catches, some of the stuff over the middle a bit better. And just the defensive turnover, I don't think they're going to go from, we'll call it 29th, 30th to 16th or something, but they're going to go from 29th or 30th to 24th. And if you make that jump, then getting to two more wins to get that seventh seed isn't super far-fetched to me. Plus, I think a lot of the guys they added are not only impact veterans in the run game, but they added a lot of star power. I think guys like Will Johnson, Josh Sweat. I know Walter Nolan's on the PUP, but he's going to play this season, their first-round rookie. Darius Robinson, who was another first-round rookie from last year, didn't play much of at all. So they're basically getting a fresh year from him. I don't know. There's a lot for me to believe in there. Washington was my number eight seed. I think that there's some regression there with Washington. Like, if they had added players instead of Debo that are, I don't even know, like a DK, I know they're different price range and stuff like that, but I trust younger players that are on. I know DK is going to be getting his third contract now, but when you're trading for players like that, I tend to want the younger player rather than the older one, especially if you're reinforcing your young QB. And stuff like that to me is why I have them taking a little bit of a step back. Maybe they're 10-7 as well as the Cardinals are, but that's who I have number seven, is the Arizona Cardinals.
I just don't see it. I want to believe that Jonathan Gannon has built it the right way, but I don't think Kyler Murray is the quarterback. And I think based on how they built this offense and the playmakers they added, like I'm not going to sit here and knock Marvin Harrison Jr. because I think he's an excellent player, but maybe Malik Nabers would have been better suited with how Kyler Murray likes to play football and where he likes to throw the football. And I think Harrison has been locked into this X receiver role, and everything that we've seen from Petzing so far in offseason and preseason, that doesn't seem like it's going to change. So I think they need to move him around just as much that they try to move Trey McBride around and give him some more opportunities. Because I think if you allow Marvin Harrison to be the playmaker he is, then you have an opportunity to take a step as a team. For me, the defense could get above average. It could borderline be a top 12 unit. I just don't know if Kyler Murray is going to be that guy that's going to be able to win games down the stretch. And so that concerns me when I look at this roster. And so that's why I lean towards more the quarterback I trust, and that's Jaden Daniels. Obviously, in your scenario, that would be the guy if I was choosing between the two. But that's just why I'm not sold. I don't think the skill sets on offense, despite this team having a lot of new talent over the past 2 years, coming together and performing at the level they need it to.
For sure. Like I see the issues. They didn't add a ton on offense, and the defense is more hope and projection than anything, but I find it just very hard for that defense to be as bad as it was last year.
Oh, they're going to be improved.
Yeah, and they still won eight games, even with the offensive deficiencies and with that bad of a defense. So I'm buying the upside, I guess, on the Cardinals. That's all the seedings. Do we want to do awards at this point?
Yeah. So MVP. I have him as the two seed, but I really think this quarterback is going to remind people who he is. He's going to start pushing the ball downfield more and just reminding people why they fell in love with Patrick Mahomes to begin with. And I think he wins his third MVP. I think he has a spectacular regular season. And again, they fixed the offensive line. He has Xavier Worthy in year two. There are a couple other playmakers. He's going to get Rashee Rice back about halfway through the year. Like, there are things to like about how this offense is going to look down the stretch, and where I talked about them having a super easy schedule. Having an easier back into the schedule is a lot better for the voters when they're looking at the last 8 weeks rather than the first 8 weeks. So that's where I think a lot of things are lining up for Patrick Mahomes. My fear is you're going to join the media favorite heading into the regular season. And that is where I am not thrilled, but we'll see what you have to say.
Well, it's time to face your fears. I'm going with the narrative driven player at this point. And if my award or if my seeding predictions for the playoffs are going to come true, then a lot of the awards that I have here are going to have to apply to those, because while people say that they don't take playoffs or like playoff seeding into consideration, they really do, right? It affects people's minds. There was like a, when Russell Westbrook averaged a triple double for the first time, like ever, or no, since Oscar Robertson, there people were like up in arms that he won the MVP and they were the sixth seed, I believe. So still in the playoffs, but oh, they're not a top whatever team. Doesn't matter. It's a regular season award, right? I mean, they still made the playoffs. So with that kind of vein in mind, if the Bengals are going to make the playoffs in my scenario, then Joe Burrow is going to be a big reason because of it. If they made the playoffs last year, his stats were good enough to where he could have won the award. I know that they were better than Lamar Jackson's, a lot of them, certainly better than Josh Allen's. And I know that Josh Allen ends up winning that award and Joe Burrow misses the postseason. But if you're in this scenario, and I can see you roll in there, I'm not talking about advanced stuff. I'm talking about raw numbers, because that's what a lot of the older voters vote upon. We have people that don't really consider EPA or success rate. That's just the fact of the matter, right? We aren't voting on these awards. The analytics nerds aren't voting on them. These are older media members. And so if you're going to make the playoffs, you're going to need another incredible Ja'Marr Chase and Joe Burrow season. And I think that given the narrative, that's already being spun out there, I think Joe Burrow has a really good chance. You got to remember, at this point last year, or not this point, a little bit into the season, we were getting tweets from CBS Sports saying, who has the most touchdowns in the last calendar year? So including stuff from the 2023 season to promote the Josh Allen MVP agenda. So when I'm seeing stuff like from the NFL, from I think Fox was their preseason MVP favorite for Joe Burrow, you got to like pay attention to that kind of thing. They were so unwilling to let Lamar Jackson win a third one before Mahomes got his third that they're like, all right, look at the calendar year leader for touchdowns. This is something important for the MVP award, including playoffs. So they're talking about stuff not even from 2023
regular season. All right, so we had this discussion a little bit.
I think it's all lining up for Burrow.
We had this discussion a little bit off air. And I get what you're saying, where the stars look like they align from like a media standpoint. But if we're simply isolating Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen, and you look at 2023 and 2024, the person who won MVP was the team with the better record, that finished better, that had the better seeding in the playoffs. When you look at advanced metrics, it's flip-flop on who should have won MVP. And so like you start adding like a Dak Prescott in 2023 or like who you're throwing in this ring and what would be 2025 and a Joe Burrow. It's like you have Baltimore and Buffalo is the 1 and 2 seeds. It's like those quarterbacks are going to have to put up gaudy numbers, and they aren't going to put up the numbers Joe Burrow is going to have to, because they don't have to be out there slinging it that much. They're just going to sling it for three quarters and then you kind of chill out the fourth quarter. And that's just the scenario of being a better composed team. And part of that is because those offenses don't have Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins. So it's there's layers on layers on layers on this discussion. I'm not going to get into it. I've said my piece on Joe Burrow. Offensive player of the year, I'm going with a supersonic dude out of Detroit. Give me Jahmyr Gibbs. I think this guy is going to tear it up. He is going to join the 2,000-yard scrimmage club this year, and he is going to be the catalyst for the Detroit Lions, who are going to find themselves back in the postseason. And if you remember how my seeding was, Detroit was the sixth seed. Washington was the third seed. So we get a rematch of that divisional round game first week of the playoffs.
So I'm in a similar vein for you for offensive player of the year. I went the other really early running back in that class. I went Bijan Robinson. Again, this was before the McGarry injury, but I'm going to stick by it. My concerns with Michael Penix kind of lend itself to this argument here, because if he isn't the superstar passing QB that I don't think he is, I think they're going to have to run the ball a lot more. And Bijan's an effective pass catcher as well. I actually think his raw numbers might be higher than someone like Jahmyr Gibbs, who I know the new offensive coordinator, we don't know how the touch count or the splits are going to go with John Morton's never called plays before. So we have no data to back that up. When?
I believe it was with the Jets back with, I believe it was one of the McCown brothers. Hold on, let me pull it up. Why go on your rant and I'll let you know so when John Morton.
We don't have any recent. We don't have any recent data of John Morton calling offensive plays, and that might have been like the Le'Veon Bell Jets. So I truthfully,
2017
like Chris Ivory. So I truthfully, yeah. Okay, so almost a decade ago he called plays. So we really don't know how the touch count's going to go there. I imagine Jahmyr Gibbs will have more touches than he has in years past just because he is ascending. He is a very, very good player. But I trust the rest of that offense more to kind of limit his carries to where I don't trust Penix enough to operate the system like I trust Goff to operate the Lions system. So I think Bijan's going to have to be relied upon more and get more raw numbers. And again, this award's not about winning, to be quite frank.
No, it's the Gaudy stats. And so going back to John Morton, you look at where he comes from. He's been tied to Sean Payton. He has ties with Dan Campbell. He's a guy that is going to run a very similar offense that we've seen. He's just probably not going to have all the trick plays that we saw Ben Johnson do, which, yes, does take a little bit of the juice and the joy of turning on Detroit tape. But what he did really well with when you see as a passing game coordinator for the Denver Broncos is they ran a lot of running back screens compared to like a Ben Johnson. And so when you look at those two kind of paired together, you look at how dynamic Gibbs was with the ball in his hands as a receiver, like that's the difference maker in my opinion. So going the defensive player of the year, We obviously disagree on which running back's going to get it. I think Gibbs will. I don't like Robinson as much for a lot of reasons. I said Nick Bosa earlier, and I'm really close to having Nick Bosa there. But I really think Will Anderson, year three breakout, similar to Jahmyr Gibbs, year three breakout, this is the year that he's going to push close to 20 sacks. And the Houston Texans are going to have a top five defense. And so I don't know if the 49ers have a top five defense. And so the Houston Texans, the defense will be carrying that team. So if this is a huge reason of why they win 10 games and Will Anderson has like 20 plus sacks and it's the first we've seen from Houston since JJ Watt was wearing the 99 there, like I think that is going to mean a lot and it's going to mean a lot to voters. And I think his transcendence is coming.
It's a really good one. He'd probably be my second pick. I'm going to go Parsons even before the trade. I thought he would rack up a lot just because like they need him to. The Cowboys defense is built upon big plays, swing plays. And now that he's going to a defense where he doesn't have to be the consistent number one guy because they're so much deeper across the defensive line. They have a guy like Edgerrin Cooper behind him, Xavier McKinney behind him. I think he's in a much better spot to be given favorable scenarios in the pass game. And I think this is a year where he can get 15 plus sacks and take home the award, especially if we're to believe, or at least I'm to believe, that the Packers get the one seed like I projected. I think Parsons would be a big reason and get rewarded for it after his, I guess we can call it, tenuous battle with Jerry Jones. I think the media is more sided with Parsons, especially after Jerry Jones's kind of rant he had the day after the trade.
Well, some of the rant made sense. Some of it didn't. It's all like window dressing. It's hard to kind of tell what's what. Khalil Mack is probably the closest we've seen to a trade like that going down in recent memory. Mm-hmm. And he didn't win Defensive Player of the Year award in 2018. Aaron Donald obviously does. He puts up a great season. The 15 sack number, that threshold, is something I'm going to be wanting to monitor because I think whether it's Nick Bosa, Will Anderson, Micah Parsons, heck, you throw in a Myles Garrett, if you want to win Defensive Player of the Year award, it's got to be, I think, north of 15 sacks, and really you should be pushing 20. And we'll see. We'll see who kind of gets there. I think you're right if, like, say Parsons, he has 16 sacks, the Green Bay Packers are the number one seed, and Will Anderson has, like, 18 sacks, and the Texans are the fourth seed. It may go to Parsons and something like that because the sack discrepancy isn't really there. But I think if that chasm is just a little bit too much, I think it does favor a guy like Will Anderson. And Parsons, despite how great he's been, despite playing alongside of DeMarcus Lawrence for these first 4 years, he hasn't racked above 15 sacks before. So this will be a milestone for him to keep in mind when we talk about Defensive Player of the Year down the stretch. Offensive Rookie of the Year, Defensive Rookie of the Year, I'm pretty cut and dry. I'm taking two guys that were taken in the top 10 that are absolutely dominant at what they do. Ashton Jeanty out of Boise State, and then Abdul Carter out of Penn State. I think Abdul Carter is the second coming of Micah Parsons. Micah Parsons won Defensive Rookie of the Year his first year. Ashton Jeanty, Ezekiel Elliott, Saquon Barkley, other guys taken in the top 10 that were premier running backs in their class, also won Offensive Rookie of the Year. So again, I'm leaning, actually, I take that back. Zeke did not win Offensive Rookie of the Year. Dak did. Zeke should have won, but that's kind of besides the point, is that like outside of like Cam Ward somehow leading the Titans to like a wild card berth or just putting up gaudy numbers, I find it very hard Jeanty not winning it just because there's nobody impeding him for touches in Las Vegas, an offense that is going to run the ball a lot.
Yeah, these are the boring picks. I think they're both the favorite as well, but I'm going Ashton Jeanty. He's going to get so many touches there, right? It's going to be between him and Brock Bowers, who, to be quite frank, Brock Bowers, should have won Rookie of the Year last year. First team All-Pro as a rookie, broke Mike Ditka's catch record from the tight end spot. So he's going to have a lot of touches, Jeanty, that is. Abdul Carter, I can't think of a time where a top five defensive player has had a more favorable spot to get immediate, like rack up immediate stats. He's going to the spot where he's going to be the third most important player that offensive lines have to worry about. And when that's the case, when they have to worry about Dexter Lawrence, when they have to worry about Burns right out of the gate, he's going to be in so many advantageous matchups to where we might see a 10 plus season from 10 plus sack season, excuse me, from Abdul Carter. That wouldn't surprise me. More of a favorite, in my opinion, than Jeanty is. Jeanty, you always got to worry about the quarterback, right? If Cam Ward gives him 9 wins or whatever, he's going to win it. The only other person I would consider is Tetero McMillan. I just think he's going to get like close to 120 targets. Like, he's going to be the guy. Dave Canales' wide receiver ones are force-fed ever since he's been a play caller. And especially with Adam Thielen being traded to Minnesota, with Jalen Coker being on IR to start the year. We don't know if that's going to linger, but he had the same injury last year and missed time. I think T-Mac is going to be force-fed touches. And if he gets to like 1,200 yards and 10-plus touchdowns, that might be in consideration for the award. But I still think it's going to be Jeanty.
Yeah, I mean, you approach the 1,200, 10-touchdown number like – It's what Brian Thomas, Malik Nabers, like Brock Bowers, they were all in that range. And I think all of them, if I were to rank it aside, like we take Jaden Daniels out of the picture last year, I personally would go Brian Thomas, Brock Bowers, Malik Nabers. And just because Brian Thomas put up more impressive numbers than Brock Bowers, despite Brock Bowers breaking a lot of records, Brock Bowers was playing a more like wide receiver type position. Like it goes back.
Who was Brock Bowers' quarterback though?
But that goes the same with Brian Thomas. That's what I'm saying. It's like both have that kind of argument. And that's what I'm saying. I think I lean Brian Thomas a little bit more. But again, that's besides the point. It's because I'm a Brian Thomas fan, Brian Thomas fantasy owner. Comeback player of the year. Aiden Hutchinson had a bad injury. Dak Prescott had a bad injury. I don't have the Cowboys making the playoffs. I do see Dak putting up a ton of numbers. And so it's like we saw Joe Burrow just win his second comeback player of the year award. And so I think I'm going to lean Dak Prescott just because of historical precedence and just how easy it is to wrap that narrative around an offensive player. And I don't know what Aiden Hutchinson's explosiveness is going to look like coming off that injury and if he's going to take a few weeks to kind of fully get back to where he was at the end of not end of last year, but before he got hurt.
Yeah, so I'm not going to do Dak. It's probably the sensible thing to give it to the quarterback. Joe Flacco won it over DeMar Hamlin, who died and was resurrected on the football field, and he still didn't win comeback player of the year. So I'm not going to go Dak, even though I probably should. I'm going to go McCaffrey, because I think if the 49ers are going to have the 12 or 13 win season we're talking about, they're going to be the 2 seed. McCaffrey is probably the best player on that offense, or he's going to have the most output, I would say. Kittle might be better at this point as far as weapons go. But he's going to have a monster season if they're going to be successful. And if he gets, I'm not going to say he's going to get close to the 1,000, but if he gets like 1,500 plus scrimmage yards, I think he's going to be a hard person to leave off there.
He's only saying that because he drafted Christian McCaffrey in the second round. So best of luck for that. Actually, the next two awards are going to be on the 49ers because I have them as my number one seed. And like you said, a lot of times teams that have a higher seed have a higher probability of some people winning awards. So my coach of the year, Kyle Shanahan. I think the fact that he'll be able to win 12 or 13 games with, quote unquote, this roster addition and coming off the poor season they had last year will be impressive in the voters' eyes, and they'll be enamored by their darling Kyle Shanahan. Who is your coach of the year?
So I think you're going about coach of the year in a really poor way. If you look at the odds winners, it's guys who beat expectations. That's who wins coach of the year. It never goes to the best coaches. When's the last time Andy Reid won coach of the year? Like, can you tell me? Has he won it with the Chiefs?
Who of the new hires? Because I know the point that you're making, but who of the new hires?
Oh, I'm not talking about a new hire. I'm saying if the Arizona Cardinals make the playoffs, like I think they are, I think Jonathan Gannon is going to get a really good shot for coach of the year. And so that's going to be my pick.
I'm not disagreeing with you if a team like the Cardinals do. I just don't have the Cardinals getting in the playoffs. Right. So I'm looking at my
and that's teams, the difference in our scenario. You could say Liam Cohen. I think Liam Cohen would be a better choice in your scenario than Shanahan would, because that's what coach of the year is. It's never going to go to, or at least in the last decade or so, it doesn't go to who's the best coach. It's who is going to outperform expectations and do something we aren't expecting, right?
So the only hesitation I'll say with that, and Bill Belichick had a couple, I think, early on in his career. I think Reed might have had some in the 2000s. Kyle Shanahan doesn't have a single coach of the year award. I think at some point, like, that has to come up in the voters' minds. Like, this is such a great coach. We haven't voted on him. And to me, that's where it's like, I get what you're saying about Liam Cohen. If he's able to turn around, that's great. I don't think Doug Peterson won. Did he win coach of the year when he took him? No, I think that was Brian Daboll that year or somebody. So, again, like, that's where I'm saying is, like, I get where you're talking about. But, like, my wild card teams, it's like Sean Payton and Mike Tomlin in the AFC. On the NFC side, it's like Nick Sirianni and Dan Campbell, who I love. Kevin O'Connell, great coach. But it's like, again, coaches that already have kind of that name value. And so that's, I think you're right that along, like, the odds, Liam Cohen would be the one within my framework. But that's why I'm leading more Kyle Shanahan here. Your coach of the year, though? Because we still
Jonathan
don't
Gannon.
Jonathan Gannon's leading. Okay, so that wasn't just like him. That is your guy.
And it's because it would be the defensive turnaround. Okay. This was one of the worst defenses ever, or not ever, but in the league. And then getting all these new faces, making it come together and leading them to a playoff berth. That's kind of the narrative that would be spun around him winning it. So I would go with Jonathan Gannon.
Okay, I like that. Protector of the Year. Probably should have done this before Coach of the Year because it's a player award. I wrote it last after all the awards. But keeping it in the same vein, another San Francisco 49er, a future Hall of Famer, I think Trent Williams wins it. I think he plays the majority of the season. He reminds everybody that he is still the best left tackle in football. I'm sure after this year, everything will be kind of downhill, but I think this is kind of like the last hurrah, kind of like what you're saying, Christian McCaffrey, if the 49ers are going to be successful, he's going to be a prominent figure, just like George Kittle. This is the last ride for some of these stars as they're moving into this new era of football.
Yeah, it's I like Trent Williams there. This is the first time we have this award, so there's no precedence really. We don't know how voters are going to vote. And initially, and I'm going to stick with this, I'm going to say Penei Sewell. I think he's the best just pure tackle in football. And with the reshuffling of the Lions' interior offensive line, if they're still a good enough team, he's going to have a big reason as to why that's the case. The award, though, because it's so new, I wonder if they're going to – and I'm not saying Trent Williams doesn't deserve it, but I wonder if they're going to try to incorporate older players into it, like people who have played so well for such a long time before they retire, to give them the award. A guy like Trent Williams, a guy like Lane Johnson, like the stalwart guys that have played for 10 plus years. I think they're going to get a shot. I think Deion Dawkins, who is like the one of the champions of this award, is also going to get a look there. But if I'm giving it to who I think the best tackle is, it would be Sewell. And then if Tristan Wirfs weren't missing so much time, I would consider him as well. But I think he's going to end up missing 4 to 6 weeks, and that might weigh in the mind of some or the opinions of some voters.
I think Tristan Wirfs and Trent Williams are a tier above Penei Sewell right now, at least when you look at pass protection. And there's some elite offensive line evaluators that I think would agree with that sentiment. I think if Trent Williams doesn't stay healthy, Tristan Wirfs obviously missing time, Sewell is going to be one of those guys that front lines and headlines, just because he is going to be such a key piece to a very talented offense. But yeah, I don't know if I lean Penei Sewell in terms of saying he's the best tackle in football. I think there's some growth there, and I'd love to see it that this year. I'd be excited to see a player of his caliber get an award like that. I just don't know if he's in the same era as some of these other tackles that should probably be more deserving.
Maybe Wirfs, I would agree. Trent Williams, we'll have to see. He's getting up there.
I'm just saying what we saw in 2023 with a full season, like, he showed what, like, Tristan Wirfs, I think, did last year. And it's just, we haven't seen that from Sewell yet.
That was two years ago as well. Like, we have to keep that in mind, you know? I do think there is going to be a legacy element, like I was saying. Like, guys like Lane Johnson and Trent Williams, I think, will have a good shot. I also don't know if interior offensive linemen are going to be as considered as tackles, all right? Because you got to think of the name recognition and compensation. But if the interior guys are recognized, I can see a guy like Quentin Nelson getting a shout, right? He's like a perennial all-pro. I'm trying to think of other guards and or centers that might get that shout.
Well, it's like Zach Martin just retired.
Yeah, like he just missed it. Yeah. Like, I don't know. Like, Linderbaum's too young, I think. And I don't think he's, like, he hasn't proven that he's the best center above everyone else, right?
Well, yeah. Would you say he's better than like a Creed Humphrey in Kansas City kind of scenario?
Or like, Joe Thuney's another good one, like legacy wise, that he could be in consideration. But I don't. It's such a new award. It's hard to project how people are going to try to vote on it. You know.
Yeah. Are we ready the jump in the perfect takes, or we do enough takes throughout this podcast? We're all taken out.
I'll throw in a quick top three draft is going to be Saints, Browns, and Dolphins. If we wanted to look at the bottom of the league, because we did the top of the league. But otherwise, we can go into perfect takes. And I guess I'm just going to apply one of my choices here. I'm going to go out on a limb and say the Cardinals sneak in. That's going to be my take, that they are not only will they – I guess I have to give them 10 wins because I think it'll take 10 wins to get in. So I'll say the Arizona Cardinals win 10 or more games. The defensive turnaround is real, and they make it into the playoffs.
I think both hypothetical quarterbacks miss the playoffs this year. That's how I have it lining up. I could see either one of them sneaking in as the seventh seed, but I think when I look at the AFC top to bottom, I look at the AFC West, I look at the AFC North, those are two really, really talented divisions, and they're going to beat up on each other. And like what we talked about with the Packers, their division record was the difference between them being a wild card team and being the number one seed. And so I think in the case of those teams not being nearly as complete as like a team like the Packers, they're going to have that difference just because of division and inner division play. And so I think Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert are nowhere present in the playoff picture this coming year. And it is going to create a lot of dialogue between social media fans because of the implications. I think the other take that would be funny is that if both of those quarterbacks played each other in the playoffs, but I don't think social media is ready for that.
I mean, to be quite frank, I don't want to see Herbert in the playoffs anymore if he's going to keep like putting up stinkers or blowing incredible leads that his defense gives him. At least Joe Burrow doesn't like show out or anything, but at least he's won games in the playoffs, you know?
I don't know that Super Bowl run. They did not score a lot of touchdowns.
Yeah. That's what I said. He doesn't show out.
That was carried by
but
Adam
he's
McPherson.
Won games, you know, fair enough. Hasn't done that. The man, that Jaguars game was just, that's just tough. Probably the worst playoff choke ever. But I think that's going to do it for us today on Thursday. We'll talk about the season opener because it is on Thursday. And then maybe a couple more games and definitely the Panthers-Jaguars game where there's just so many similarities that I think it's just interesting that even if we weren't Panthers fans, I think that's an interesting one to talk about. But until then, you can find us on our socials, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Twitter, and keep pounding.